emergency operations centers and the various support infrastructure that you know they might need to send a you know a file of X-ray images or something like that, you know, and well, you could do that. You could send digital messages of all kinds, just as you do over the internet or as you would do over your own private wired LAN in the home, if you had such a thing. Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra, back to net.
Very good, Randy. I think that's excellent. Thank you. And I'll just elaborate a little bit more, one more thing for those who wonder, well, what frequencies and all that, as you said, the Wi-Fi frequencies. So let's see if you'll correct me if I have them correctly. But among those bands are, I think, 900 megahertz, 2.4 gigahertz, 5.8 gigahertz, and are there any more that I should be listing, Randy?
Yeah, you've got the three at the moment, the 900 megahertz, 2.4 gig, and 5.8 gig. There is some very early stage development being considered. It's not actively being worked on yet, but it's being considered for the frequency band around the 3 gigahertz range, but that's not viable at the moment. But the other three bands actually have equipment operating in each of those three bands and operating successfully.
Roger, Randy. Very good. And once again, I'll elaborate on what Randy said or reiterate. These bands are the same ones that are used for everybody's Wi-Fi, but ham radio operators are entitled to certain channels where they can run higher power, etc. So does that need any more elaboration than I said, Randy, or was that fine?
Oh, that was very nicely done. Thanks for adding to what I've said. It helps clarify the thing. And again, I encourage people that are looking for more information to go out to the Arden website, Alfa Romeo Echo Delta November.org, and find what you're looking for and answer the question. Or if you don't find the answer to your question, please post it on our forum, and we've got a very responsive development team that will come back with some sort of response to your question very, very quickly.
Okay, bravo. Thank you, Randy. WU2S, this is K2EIR. And I know the hour grows late, and we have one more comment listed, but let me just take a break to say this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net, along with the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club, who sponsors the repeater and the net. And I am K2EIR, this week's Net Control. And you can find past editions of the net on amateurradio.tv. And there is a Yahoo group where you can also ask questions, make comments. Comtech group on Yahoo. Comtechgroup. Okay. Next with a comment is KD2FIG. That's the last one listed. Let me just take a standby. Are there any other stations? It's going to be a long standby, so if you're on Echolink, you'll have time to come in. Or any comments, et cetera, to list, any business to list, please call me now, K2EIR.
KM4HBQ, disconnected.
Okay, nothing. Guess what, Lewis? You get to give your comment. KD2FIG, this is K2EIR.
Roger that, KD2FIG. You know what, disregard the comment. Ken's still there. Thanks a lot for the antenna help. I just received the antenna the other day, so just finished putting it up. So if anyone wants to know, the MFJ Actually, here comes the comment. The MFJ hamstick 40 meter does work when you times it by 2 and get the 347. It does work. It takes a lot. I trimmed it down, and I was able to trim it down to the S on the SWR, which is probably like 1 to 1.1 on the 857 Delta. So that works good if anybody's looking into that for the HF and the 40 meters. And I did it all without a tuner, so real good. All right, KD2FIG, and hello to the other guys. First time I hear a call sign close to mine is KD2DIG. And Ken as well, hello. So I'm going to wrap it up, and I'll give it back to Ned. Have a great night, everyone. KD2FIG73.
Roger Lewis, thank you for your comment, and welcome to the Net. Always glad to have everybody on board. Okay, guys, we wound up going an hour and a quarter. I know for some of you it seemed like a long time. Thank you for showing up. I'm going to take one more standby. If anybody has anything they'd like to ask, comment on, etc., this is your chance. Otherwise, we hope to see you next week when Gordon, W2TTT, will be welcomed back and take over the Net once again, I expect. So anyone, again, with any business for the Barra Chestnut Ridge Radio Club Technical Net, please call me, your net control for tonight, Howie, K2EIR.
JEK, N2NBR, John, have a question, I believe.
Son of a gun, you are correct. I apologize. John, you were asking about, and actually Ken had listed grounding antenna systems, but we'll check with Ken if he wants to hold it for next week. But John wants to know about antenna load. So John, why don't you bring up the question again, and before everyone pulls the big switch, maybe you'll get an answer that has some meaning for you. N2NBR, this is K2EIR. John, go ahead and pose the question again about antenna load.
Okay, Howie. The question, N2NBR, the question is basically this, you know, a typical fashion type of thing. You know, you find an antenna that's been in your garage for 25 years, and the company that built it was long out of business and like that. So you want to add it to your, let's say you want to add it to your the mast that you already have up. You know, at that point it's either a tower or maybe just a single antenna like me. But basically I just wanted to know if there was a prescribed method that manufacturers or other people might use to measure the wind load of a particular given antenna. And I was just wondering whether it's a mathematical computation or if it depends on the thickness of various pieces of aluminum that might be existing. Or maybe there's a formula that I've never heard of or something like that. Back to you, Howie. Howie, I'm sorry, I didn't write down your N2NBR. Back to you.
Very good, John. This is Howie, K2EIR, Ohm's Law, or Excellence in Radio, whatever. Thank you, John. So does anyone have any advice for John? I think it's a very good question, but I am certainly at a loss to give an answer. Anyone with any thoughts whatsoever that might be helpful to John, please call and give me your call letters, K2EIR.
W2JEK.
WK, let me see if anybody else wants to be on the list, Don. Anybody else want to be listed? You got it all. W2JEK from K2EIR.
Okay, well, if it's a manufactured antenna, you know the name, and the manufacturer's name and model number. Might be possible to look at an old magazine someplace, or even look it up on the internet. I don't know if you tried that at all. Figure it out. Or something similar that's on the market now that would be approximately the same one. The idea, what type of antenna is this? Back to that W2JK.
Go ahead, John, answer the question.
KLM, six elements. KLM, as you might know, is not in the antenna business anymore. I don't know what happened to them, but I
I've long since lost the paperwork, that would have provided this information. But I want to combine it on the same mast with a 2-meter antenna and also a 440 antenna. And putting it all together, I wanted to know if I can, for example, put up with a basic garden variety Radio Shack TV rotator and the mast, and maybe how many radials would I need, or how many how much support I would need. And
what band is this for?
Well, the KLM would be on 220, and the 2 meters would be on, just 2 meters, repeater frequencies. And 440 is probably a, I don't know what the name of that one is, or the manufacturer of that one is, but it's not very big. It's only about maybe 2 feet long, and the elements are about a foot high each, and there's about six of them. So I'm not really not worried about that so much as I'm worried about the combination of all three. As you all know, that we've had some nasty windstorms around here in recent years, and so that's the main thing I'm concerned of. And by the way, my TV antenna mast, when I bought this house, it was like 25 years ago, and the guy who owned it before me used it to pick up TV stations from southern Connecticut. And in so doing, he, if a football or whatever was blacked out, which they used to do in those days, he was able to watch a football game. And so that's what this antenna was basically, this system here was basically used for. It's basically, a really small rotator, nothing ham radio size, but put it all together and it becomes meaningful. In other words, you don't want to pull support the guy wires out of the top of the roof and create a hole that way. How many do you need? So you really have to, in my view anyway, you got to start someplace.
If you have the type of antennas, the other two antennas, you can at least get the wind load app and then get the other one.
The moment on the mast may be a problem, so as long as he keeps the antennas reasonably closely spaced, but far enough to be useful, but don't get greedy above the rotator, those two antennas should be fine.
Better stuff with the advertise that stuff.
WI2W.
Okay, we had Gordon, I think, and Steve. Gordon, you sort of doubled. Stand by. I'm going to put a big note here. I won't forget you, Gordon, W2TTT. Steve, go ahead.
Okay. M squared picked up the KLM line, at least on the HF stuff. So you might contact the folks at M squared, and they might be able to give you the information on that KLM antenna. Back to that.
Roger. Okay. Let's see if we can get Gordon. Gordon, you've been kind of spotty, not holding it 100%. But let's see if we can get your comments, because I did hear some of it about wind load and so forth. W2TTT, this is on Echo Link. This is K2EIR.
Okay, 32EIR, W2TTT. All right, the reason why my audio is squirrely is because I'm actually logged into Ken's repeater in Alliance, which has been in turn logged into ours in New Jersey, because for whatever reason the Echolink's not accepting a connection directly from me. Having said that, there's an EIA standard, actually. I think they're up to the G revision of it. I forget. If you look up EIA wind loading standard, or tower standard, it's all specified in there for round and square stock antennas on a tower, blah, blah, blah. Obviously, with the advent of cellular and things like that, and land mobile radio exploding, people are really excited about the mechanical loads on towers, even from the coax and things like that. So, and now the more intelligent RF heads. that actually transmit right off the back of the antenna and receive off the back of the antenna, and then just use fiber or Ethernet up the tower instead of coax. But there are such things out there. There's an EIA standard for it. It will help you. But if one is a 2-meter antenna, one's a 220 antenna, I think that's what you said, or 432, you know, just don't get greedy with how much separation or above the rotator they are. Put the heavier antenna, like an inch or two above the rotator, get the other one just a few feet up, maybe 3-4 feet up should be fine. And that should work if it's 2 meters and 440 anyway. 10-foot boom, if it's only 2 meters and 220, you should be able to put them about 3-4 feet apart, even 5 feet apart without too much trouble. Also, those pass-through type rotators, some of them have thrust bearings you can buy that just sit underneath the rotator, so that the rotator doesn't take all the vertical load, just the torsional load to rotate it. Anyway, that's all I got to say now. K2EIR in the group, W2TTT, Mobile 4.
Roger. 100% there. John, any further comments? N2NDR from K2EIR.
Okay, thanks, Gordon and everybody else. It sounds as if you're saying I should worry about the wind resistance from a low frequency. In other words, the lower the frequency, meaning 2 meters in this case, I should put that one up first. In other words, have that one on the bottom, and then 220 is the next one, the next smallest, and then, of course, it's 440 after that. But I'm just concerned about, you know, some of these antennas are extremely sensitive to surrounding objects, no matter what they are, whether it's another antenna or what. But maybe I'll just try that, just, you know, sort of run it up the flagpole and see if anybody salutes it as far as, you know, non-interference capabilities in that situation. So, and by the way, the 220, no, the 2-meter antenna is going to be a... horizontally and vertically polarized, so that's another issue as well. But from a wind load resistance standpoint, it would probably double the wind load resistance as opposed to a, you know, either straight or horizontal or straight vertical. But anyhow, again, thank you, gentlemen. And as the weather gets a little warmer, I'll be going after this issue a lot, in a lot more earnest way, shall we say. Back to you, Gordon. Back to you. Okay. Net control, back to you.
Yeah, that works. Okay. Any further comments on this topic from anyone? Just list your call for out your call. This is K2EIR Howie.
Mr. J.E.K.
Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, well, I imagine this fellow was trying to pick up, the original owner of your house was trying to pick up football games up in Connecticut. He probably had a pretty big antenna up there already. Something one of those, and he figured that was good for 56 megahertz and up, so it's not just the little HF antenna that he was using. Pretty small structure, I would think, but to keep in mind also. Back to that, W2JK.
Roger, Don. Anybody else on this topic?
Yeah, I would like to add one more point, and that is, if he's got vertical elements running through there, or even horizontal elements on 432 with an inch and a half or inch and a quarter mass running through it, that's going to distort the pattern of the vertical pattern of the 2-meter and 220 and 432, but also the horizontal pattern of the 432 or 440 antenna. So you're going to need to use a non-conductive mask if you're going to have vertical radiation elements or any short element like 432. You can't put a mask among that element that's conductive. It just doesn't work very well. Unless it's very small, like sub 1 inch, it's really kind of it's messed up. Unless you're mounting them on the end, if they're end mounted, you could get away with that.
Okay, Gordon. Unless they're end mounted, we copy. Anyone else on this topic or any rebuttal, John? K2EIR.
Okay, yeah, the only other thing I was thinking of is maybe in deference to Gordon's suggestion, maybe I'll get a piece of 1-inch plywood, you know, down at the local Home Depot and get, you know, that would possibly observe the, or it would prevent the antennas from interfering with each other is what I'm trying to say. And so we'll see what happens. I have some time to do with it, to deal with this. Obviously, I'm not going up there for another month or two. But thank you, everyone. I appreciate it. And I'm going to have a lot of food for thought now. Back to you, Howie. And I'll be listening out K2EIR and 2NBR.
Roger, John. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Gordon. Alrighty. Anybody else? Final chance on this topic. K2EIR. Nothing heard. Okay, Ken, N2VHV. You did list as a discussion topic about grounding antennas and that sort of thing. Do you want to discuss that tonight? I doubt everybody is still here. But I'm open to it if you want to go over there. Otherwise, my suggestion is hold it for next week. N2VHC to get it from K2EIR.
This is November to Victor Hotel Zulu. Don't hold it. I'll follow your suggestion. Hold it till next week. It's only 8:30 at night. I don't know what's everybody leaving for. Oh, you're 2 time zones away. I forgot. Okay. Okay, very good. I do have one question. On the mesh net, I just want to ask this because I couldn't get it to ask it before. I think I doubled with Lewis and you didn't hear me. The mesh net, does that transmit on the amateur allocated frequencies that are available? Because I see amateurs are secondary users. It's just shit. All of our amateur frequencies, and you start going up there like by 23 centimeters and 12 centimeters. The UHF band, those are considered shared, and we are secondary users. And my question is, do we transmit that mesh net on those frequencies? And if so, because we're using amateur techniques and protocols, nothing can be encrypted, so any sensitive information would have to be sent in a special way that we are not allowed to do. Is that correct in my assumption? Back to that K2.
EIR,
this is N2VHC.
Okay. Randy is still here. You want to respond to that?
Yes, Howie, thank you. And thank you for the question. The transmission is done on amateur radio frequencies, as Howie had mentioned earlier. And it's perfectly legal and has been vetted. Rather than get into a lengthy discussion about that here so late at night, again, I would suggest that you go out to the Arden website and find the information related to it there, or if you don't see the answer to the specific questions that you're raising, please raise those questions in the forum. And I'm certain that you'll get a response very quickly. But thanks for asking the right kind of questions. Back to net control.
Okay. Randy, who is primary on the three bands I mentioned, which is where the Ubiquiti equipment is presently being manufactured for? And that's 900 megahertz, 2.4 gigahertz, and 5.8. I think I can partially answer that there are all the public users, the general public that buys a router and all that, and the about the ham segments, and of those two, hams have higher priority than the general public in the ham on the ham channels. But are there any other like government uses that are primary and we're secondary, Randy?
I believe what you said is generally correct, but I am not the right person to respond to that. I am not a telecommunications lawyer, nor am I an expert on spectrum allocation. There are people on the Arden team who are much better versed in addressing these questions than I am, so I don't even want to attempt an answer that I fear might be partly incorrect. So ask the question on the Arden website, and then we'll all have a definitive answer.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Randy. This is K2EIR. I am going to take a standby for Gordon. Gordon, just to satisfy us for tonight, we'll have the caveat that it may not be an authoritative answer. I'm wondering if you know. W2TTT from K2EIR. Oh, I don't think we have Gordon with us any longer, so okay. Ken, ask it on the Arden website, I guess. Back to you, Ken. N2VHC from K2EIR.
K2EIR, this is N2VHC. Yeah, I'm looking at my Echolink display here, and Gordon had dropped off just now. He's no longer coming into my repeater, and I think he lost connection. But he was on quite a while. Now, I'm looking at the Arden website. Very nice website. Very, very nice. Okay, very good. I'll have to register on there and check it out. And I think that's all I need to say, and I'll hold my question for next week that I originally had opened up with. But back to Net Control. Thank you for your time. This is N2VHC in Alliance, Nebraska.
Volume down, have the gain down a little bit. Was that JEK?
W2JEK. Yeah, generally, I don't think the FCC wants anybody on the ham bands to be using any kind of ciphers or codes. I mean, in that sense of the word, that they're disguising what's being sent. They want to be, they're lending something, you don't send these codes, you don't send a bunch of five-letter code groups that they're going to have to decode or decipher like the Terry does or anything like that. Able to plain text, so to speak. I think even if you're using RIDI or something like that, that you have to use a standard mode that they can put a RIDI machine on and monitor what you're sending. Not that they know anything about it, but something that the problem is not sending the right something that they don't like, they're happy about it. So they'll avoid anything that they can't. Yeah, in other words, somebody comes up like Hoteller comes up with coding for long distance transmissions or something like that. They have to sort of be in on it so that they can listen to that if they so choose. Whether they do or not is something else. But it has to be something that's compatible with the conventional receiving system they use. Back to that W2JK.
Roger, Don. Yeah. Okay, so we'll leave that. I think that the whole encryption thing is still pretty standard. You know, the FCC has not changed its rules, but I'm sure the discussion on the aredn.org site will be insightful. Ken, I hope I don't really owe you an apology. Let me, if I do, I do apologize. But I thought when you raised the whole grounding antenna system issue, it was as a discussion point in case we didn't have anything else or we didn't have much. So that's why I sort of held off on that one. And if I was wrong, then I owe you one, okay? I'll just turn it back to you before I'm trying to get to closing the net because it is getting late here. So I'll just check with you whether I ruffled any feathers or whether I owe you one, because I'm good on my word. If I owe you one, we'll try to make up for it, or I'll work with Gordon on making up for it for you, Ken. N2VHV from K2EIR.
N2EIR. This is N2VHC. No, no big deal. That's how it happens, man. I'll bring it up next week. It's kind of like a discussion. I'm going to open up with that and get some opinions, and it's some personal experiences I had, you know, that could substantiate my claims. And then I want other people to be able to explain maybe why that might not be the best method and so forth and so on. And, you know, kind of like a brainstorming session. So, yeah, it would not be appropriate right now, being it's late by you guys. But still, it's only 20 till 9 over here. So we can go here in Nebraska for another hour or two. We'll do like the Limemark tech then. We'll go for 3-4 hours continuous. How do you like that one? You hear another net, we can switch off. We can share net control. How's that grab you? Because I'm in a different time zone, I can go for 2 more hours. And I'm going to hand it back to you, Howie. And thanks for your understanding. And I'll bring it back next week, the question. And back to K2EIR. This is N2VHC.
Okay. Well, I'm sure it'll get some airtime sooner or later. And it does sound like it might be interesting the way you have stated it. Okay, everybody. I don't know how much is everybody. And Ken, of course, after I close the net, you're welcome to have any discussion you want. The repeater will still be here. Okay. I need to get some sleep, which is my orientation. I've got to get up early tomorrow. We're expecting a snowstorm. And I have family responsibilities and other commitments. So, without further ado, to quote the master, are there any stations anywhere, Echolink or on this repeater, who have any further business for the Barra Chestnut Ridge Radio Club Technical Net? If you do, please list it now. This is K2EIR.
K2EIR, just quickly, what is that Arden website again? This is K2GFM.
Fair question. That's ARDN.org. It's Alpha Romeo Echo Delta November.org. There's also a posting in the Comtech group on Yahoo, and there was a posting about it, I think, also on QRZ.com in the past week. So you've got 3 places of reference there. K2EIR.
Found it. Thank you very much. K2GFM.
Okay. Very good. So when I ask the question, I know I get a serious answer that people do have more business. Okay. We'll ask it again in case there's anybody else. Anyone with business for the net? This is K2EIR. Okay, I hear none. I hereby declare that the Barra Technical Net for this evening is now complete at 10:44 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. 10:45, excuse me. Thanks, guys, for being here, and thanks for making it a good net and keeping me busy and off the streets at night. 73, everyone. K2EIR, closing the net and returning this repeater to general amateur radio use.
Connected WB2PTV.
Nothing says spring like 6 inches of snow.
Yeah, I know. I heard about it. Lovely.
You know if Willie ever went home from the hospital, or is he still in there?
Last text was yesterday afternoon, after I got home from Debbie's house. He was still in. Didn't know if he was getting out yesterday or today.
I think that's pretty invasive. I don't know if they cut you open or if they just go in through a couple of holes and do it all.
Last I heard, they were going to go in through some holes.
Yeah, okay. Well, I imagine the recoup time will be a bit tough, especially when he starts to eat again, regular food. My sister-in-law had something similar. I think, I don't know if she had gastric bypass or... Yeah, I think that's what she had. And she had to eat smaller meals, much smaller meals. Can't eat a lot. But it's good. I mean, it'll certainly help him, that's for sure. I was talking to my neighbor when I took my dog out for a walk. They came over to see him. And they've been on a diet all winter. He lost 89 pounds. So dieting and going to the gym and using the elliptical machine.
Boy, he must have been pretty big if he took off 89 pounds, that's for sure.
Yeah, next time I talk to him, I'm going to ask him how heavy he had gotten. He's about my height, but yeah, he was pretty beefy, and he looked good. I actually thought she had a new boyfriend.
Let's not go there.
They have two dogs as well that are adopted or rescues, and that after my dog gets his booster, she wants to set up a play date with the three of them. So that'll be good. My dog certainly wants to be around other dogs, I'm sure. It would be nice if he could get to know these dogs while he's a puppy. That way, when he's bigger, I don't have to worry about him eating them.
You're funny. I tell you, the dog eating the dog. Why, those other dogs on the small side?
Yeah, they're those yappers. What do you call them? Yorkies? Yeah, they're real tiny. I see her out in the backyard walking them every so often. She brings them out to her backyard and walks them around. That's going to follow me? No? Okay. I got to say, oh yeah, but if it's any indication how tough my dog will be about what happened yesterday, he finally pissed the cat off enough that the cat chased him around the dining room table. It was a pretty funny sight to see. Cat chasing the dog.
N1OU, KD2BOR. What the heck did the dog do to the cat that he started chasing him?
Just gets in his face too much. I don't know if he, napped at him, in a playful way. That's all he really wants to do is play with the cat. But, the cat's, a few years old, a lot more mature than the dog, and just wants to kind of be left alone. He's curious, but he's not in the mood to roll around on the floor with the dog. In fact, now the cat just sits there and lets the dog come right up to him. But then when the dog starts to invade the cat's, personal space, the cat gets a little frustrated. Finally, the dog cornered him under a chair, and the cat came out swinging and chased the dog right around the table a couple of times. It was hilarious. I wish I had my cell phone camera going. It would have been nice to videotape.
Which cat did this? The one I got in the box here, or the other one?
The black and white one. The other one's still pretty skittish. He doesn't hide all day like he used to. He knows when to come up, but the dog still scares him. But even people scare him. He's not the social butterfly that the other cat is.
Yeah, very good. I had the 857 online all day in the car yesterday for as much as I was in the truck. I got such bad audio reports on that radio, I just flipped the switch and went back to my Alinco. I'm a little, I don't know, I'm wondering if there's something wrong with that 857 that I got. I wish I knew somebody around here with another microphone that I could try on it, because I got totally disgusted with it yesterday.
If I remember, I'll since I've got two mics, I'll bring one over, and you can try it on the radio. But I want you to sit in front of it one day when I'm in front of mine, and we'll go over a couple of other things. See if we can't make it sound a little bit better. Yeah, it does sound very muffled. I don't know why. There's got to be something we're missing on this set. There's so many settings on that thing for the audio.
Well, I got some settings that AC, let's see, NZ2K gave Chris, and I set mine up that way. I heard Chris on his in his car, and it sounded good. I don't know. I'm not too fond of that radio so far.
I'll have to try to get on mine, maybe Saturday morning, after I take the dog out for a walk. Maybe I'll bring him in the basement, let him hang out there for a little while, and I'll, get on my 857 with that microphone, and you can hear how it sounds. I wish you had a way of recording me. That way we could compare how I sound to how you sound. But I'll record you on yours eventually.
I just hope nothing's wrong with the radio, because I don't know what's going on. I don't believe a radio can sound that bad.
I'm trying to think, do you have any other mics that might fit that thing that you could try?
It's 8-pin. The only other Yaesu mic I got is 6-pin for the 7900.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, do you know how to get into the menu? I can't remember. There's a button you push and hold. There's two different menus you can get into. One's like a quick menu, and then the other one's a sub-menu.
Yeah, that's no problem. I know how to get into the menu on the radio. I'm already in the sub-menu, where there's more adjustments.
I'll have to look through mine and write down the menu numbers of some of the things to check and change, if need be. There's one, like I said, that's high pass, low pass, both. I'm curious what that's set on. I think that's menu number 87. I don't know why that sticks in my mind.
I'll have to check that later. I think the last time we tried to do some adjustments, I think you said to leave it on both. That comes to mind.
It says high pass. I'm assuming it lets the high frequency audio through. You know, high pass and then low pass. That's more low frequency audio through. I would say, because of the way it sounds, I would say put it on high pass and see how that sounds.
Well, if we get this snow tomorrow or today, and it's bad enough, I'll have plenty enough time to fool around with it tomorrow, because I'm going to cancel the two jobs I got coming in if the snow's too bad. Nothing pressing on the cars. I'm trying to work on a car that's all covered in snow. I'm just not up to that anymore.
Yeah, I don't blame you having all that water dripping on you while you're underneath it. Can't be fun.
N1LU KD2VOR. Yeah, I've had a little knot in my stomach since yesterday with this radio. I'm really actually disgusted. I'm really disgusted with it.
Well, don't go off the deep end yet. That's the mic that came with it.
Everything as I got it, all in one box, including the separation kit. I got that deal when I bought it.
I'm just trying to think if there's anything off the top of my head that could fix it. Jesus, I don't know. You know, except for going through the menu and changing some of the audio settings. I can't think offhand right now. And that's a newer radio. That's got 60 meters in it.
Yeah, it's a D version. I don't know how long I got it. I have to check my warranty card. I got the box right in my room. I'll have to check that when I get home. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a factory reset on the radio, and then I'm going to program it back up with the RT systems, and get the repeaters and everything back in and start all over again.
Well, that's certainly an option. I don't know how many repeaters. I'd hate to do a factory reset on mine. I mean, I guess it's no big deal, but I got tons of machines in there, most of which I don't even know where they are or what they are. Some I got alpha tagged. I've got HF. What I did is I went through all the HF bands, and I programmed in the low end of each band. So all I do is go to 18 meters and start tuning upward. Same thing with 20, 40, all of those starts at the low end that I'm allowed to go to. And all I have to do is tune upward.
Between HF and the repeaters, I got 41 slots filled up. I got the RT systems. I got it right up on my screen right now. I got Chris's RT systems. I got to get it back to him. The only thing I'm going to have to do is buy a cable. I already got the program loaded into my computer.
Oh, okay, well, that's good. So you just bring the radio in, put it on a power supply, and hook it up to the computer, and you can program it?
Yes, sir. No problem. I got the same program in my computer here for the 7900. Because you know, since I had that radio, how much I hate programming that one.
Yeah, that's the biggest reason I never programmed it through the computer, is I don't have a computer set up easy enough to, you know, with a power supply and all that. That's why I end up learning how to do it manually. KD2BOR N1LU, coming up to the George Washington Bridge.
I didn't even think you stopped for your coffee yet.
Yeah, I did. The pooch didn't do too much this morning. Just a little pee, and then he wanted to go back in. Fed him, put him to bed, and figured the sooner I get out of the house, the sooner he'll settle down. Once he knows nobody's going to get up to pat him or do, you know, let him out, he'll quiet down. I left as early as I could.
Yeah, I tell you, I'm not looking forward to this weather today. It's going to be unbelievable.
Well, if it's any consolation, next week's going to be in the high 40s, low 50s most of the week anyway, according to the weather reports I was looking at.
What time do you plan on getting out of there today?
I don't know. I work with a guy who, I call him Chicken Little, and as soon as it starts to snow, he's going to be looking to leave. And he's on the same salary base as I am. So I just kind of sit around and wait for him to, for his yellow streak to show up. And then he goes into the office and says, you know, I'm getting out of here. It's starting to snow. And then I follow him out because there's no way in hell I'm doing more time than him when he gets paid the same as I do. And I have a lot further. He lives in Staten Island. And I have a hell of a lot further to drive than him. So he's my barometer. I do what he does.
N1OU KD2BOR. I don't know when it's going to start. I haven't had an updated forecast yet. So what I saw yesterday on Channel 7 in the morning, that guy said it was going to start between 10 and 12. Supposed to snow all afternoon.
Yeah, that's kind of what I heard too. Around 10 or a little bit later. The later the better for me. But I think it's going to start. It'll start slow, won't stick right away, so they said. I've got, what the hell do I have for my glasses? I have 37 degrees, so a little bit warm for snow, but I'm sure it'll cool off. They said later this afternoon it'll get a lot heavier, and that'll be fine. I'll be home by then.
Well, we shall see. I got one vehicle outside I'm going to put inside in case the kids got a plow here. And, I don't know. We'll find out.
off, that's for sure.
Yeah, I had the Weather Channel on before, and they said by 6 o'clock in the morning it's going to be down to 31. So that'll definitely be cold enough, that's for sure.
The gas came down a little bit more over here on 46. Going by the quick check, see what it is over there.
Got gas the other day, or maybe a Sunday, I don't remember. I have no clue. I haven't even looked at a price at a gas station lately.
Yeah, I'll definitely bring that mic over to you, because I put them both on the radio and you didn't notice any difference between the two. I'm just going to bring the head. So all you have to do is, because the extra cable I have has an 8-pin on it, 8-pin screw-on. So I'll just bring the head. All you got to do is pull your head off your cable and put this one on and see if it makes any difference.
Yeah, we'll give it a shot. Hey, just leave it alone right now. It's just going to stay the way it is.
What I'll do is I'll study up on my 857, and when I bring you the mic head, I'll jump in your truck and try to change some parameters on that radio. See if we can make it sound a little sharper. I mean, it's, you know, it's loud enough. It's just very muffled for some reason.
One thing I may do today is take the mic apart. I want to check the openings and make sure they're open. You know, when they molded the microphone, who knows what those openings are like.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what it almost sounds like. It sounds like there's a membrane or something covering the hole. But yeah, that's a good idea. I would tell you to make the hole a little bit bigger, but I know if you want to sell the radio because you're frustrated with it, I don't know if that'll be a good idea.
No, I'm not going to deface the mic that way. I don't want to get rid of it. I want to make it work. It's perfect for the truck, and the way I got it set up, if I ever go on a field day, I just take that unit out of the back of my truck that I got hanging up there, put the head back on the radio, and I'm ready for a field day. That's why I did it the way I built that bracket, so I could use the radio on a field day.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you want to keep it. Yeah, I'm sure we'll get it set up so it sounds better. Yeah, they just may, you know, that's a newer model. I don't know, maybe they, maybe when it came off the line or something, they forgot to take something off, or the hole wasn't drilled out as good. It could be a couple of things. But it certainly doesn't sound like any of the 857s I've heard. I heard this one guy, I wish I had kept his call sign, who was on an 857 with a aftermarket filter in it, a wide filter. I think it was like a 2.8 filter on his, and it sounded great.
And 10-1-0-U, KD2-BOR. I don't think it would have anything to do with the filter I put in the radio, because the filter is a sideband filter, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, that's interesting. That's right. You put in a filter. What filter did you put in? Do you remember?
I know it's a sideband filter, Charlie. It was an original Yaesu box. I got the filter from CWW.
I don't see how it would affect the audio on FM.
Yeah, when I come back from Debbie's, I'm going to unplug the microphone. I got a new power cord here that I made up. Like I said, I might just bring the radio back in, do a full clear on it, and reprogram it again from the day and put it back in the car, and then we can start fresh.
Well, if you do that, I'm trying to think, around 7 o'clock, the big shots go out for breakfast. If you do that, it's you got at least 955 in there at 7. Give me a text, and I'll run out to the car if you made any changes with the mic or whatever, and I'll run out to the car and take a listen.
Yeah, I'm a little slow today. I'll make a decision on what I'm going to do. The filter I put in, according to Universal site, is the YF-122S, Collins 2.3 SSB filter.
I just had a cop almost cut me off. I had to slam on my brakes. He was getting ready to come from a side street and cut across in front of me. I guess he didn't see me. I don't know how the hell he didn't see me. And we both slammed on our brakes at the same time. I thought for sure he was going to follow me just because he might have been pissed off, but he didn't.
Well, if it's anything like the police officer around here, he was probably on his cell phone.
Yeah, so many people think, you know, these guys, they put on a uniform and they're like superhuman, but, you know, they're just like you and I. You know, they got a little bit more training. Assuming they give them defensive driving training. But this guy just, you know, I guess he wasn't paying attention. I mean, I saw him. I knew he had to come to a stop because he was coming off a side street with a stop sign. But he was ready to blow through the stop sign and got right in front of me. Scared the hell out of me. Got my adrenaline going.
Oh, yeah, and it's not fun, especially in the dark. Maybe he just didn't see you. Who knows? Yeah, I'm looking on this site here, and according to Universal, they only sell three different filters, at least them, for that radio. The SSB filter and two different CW filters.
Yeah, that W4RT, I think it is, he sells a couple of filters, too, for that radio. One is, I believe, a narrow filter, 1.8. Then there's INRAD, International Filters, INRAD. They sell some aftermarket filters for that radio as well, a whole bunch of different ones. And that's where that guy got the 2.8 filter from, was from INRAD.
N10UKD2BOR. Yeah, I've heard of that company. Matter of fact, my 850 had an INRAD filter installed in it.
Oh, really? Okay, that's cool. Yeah, they're very well-known.